Om Shanti. Welcome to this great panel to share with you are the double foreigners, Didis and Dadas. So, I think it will be a great 1 hour or more than an hour to share with you on the topic obstacle free as an inspiration from last night. Brother Eric will introduce the Dadas and the Didis, double four Dadas and Didis.
Om Shanti, good morning. It's hard to speak slower if you haven't even started speaking yet, so we'll see what we can do with that. Want to invite all of you to come closer, because I think our family from Shantivan will be visiting, and they tend to sit in the back, and they come and they look around, and they kind of sit next to you, and then they look at you, and so if you are up here, they will sit in the back and look up here for the few minutes that they're in the room. And whatever your thoughts about, sisters can kind of move into the center side too, whatever your thoughts about this panel or interview or gathering was going to be is probably wrong. We are here kind of to have a little conversation. This is a group of individuals that I do not get to spend as much time as I would like to with. And so I'm going to kind of move it into the heartfelt conversation sitting around. I asked Sister Trish, who asked us to be on here, for coffee and pastries. So we're going to have a little coffee shop conversation is our intent. And we invite you to join in that feeling with all of us. My name is Eric. I am servicing in New York, United States at this time. And I use Sheep Genti as my birthday spiritually also, because I kind of forgot when I came into Gyan, so it's easy to just kind of pile on to Baba's birthday. I can remember that when he's cutting the cake. It's like, oh yeah, this is a time that I can remember too. It's springtime. I hope to go back to New York without winter, so I kind of like the springtime feeling of a birthday. And the individuals in front of you have had many Shiv Gentis and Shiv Ratris. I'm sitting next to Brother Charlie from Australia. In the center of the three is Sister Denise from many places, UK, CA, LA. Now she's from Shantivan. I'm not sure where she's actually at, but she's in Gyan Silver right at this moment. And on the far end is Sister Wadi, who is originally from Ireland and wandered through London and now is the Queen of Florida, something like that. And so rather than go on about how great they are, they're going to share one of their favorite Shivratri experiences with you as a way of introduction and for you to get to meet them. And that's why I'm telling them now, so they have at least 5 seconds to think about that. But I did a little calculation. The cake had the number 78 on it, correct, last night? And so Dadi Janki's been in Gyan around 78 years. And I was thinking that these are some of the first individuals to meet Dadi Janki in London. So they are truly the double foreigner Dadas and Didis. They are the very, very, very first of those to understand the concepts from the East in the West. And they've all been in Gyan around near 40 years, okay? 40 this year is Denise, okay? And so if you want to be real precise, she's not 40, she's 39, and that's half of 78. So you have like a dotty and a half of experience up here. These are great individuals with lots of experience, and we're going to try to tease some of that out, and hopefully that our conversation will go the way you want, and if it's not, you might want to raise your hand and kind of interject something. How are we doing with the translation so far? Nobody's heard anything, right? Okay. Do we have translators? Okay, there was supposed to be a head nod or a hand wave or, yeah, we're with you, or did they wave? Yeah, but they're supposed to wave. Anyway, okay, very good. Yeah, that's right. Laugh at the joke. Here we go. Okay, so would like the individuals, and Wadi's going to start. She raised her finger. That's the sign, I've been told. To share a little bit about yourself.
Oh, no, you had a Shivratri experience.
A Shivratri experience, but you have your own experiences, so it is your experience you're going to share, isn't that? Are you going to share my experience?
My experience, a Shivratri experience.
A Shivratri experience. Sister
right.
Wadi, would you please?
You said a few seconds. This is very light. So I don't remember the year. It would have been the early to mid-80s. And Baba had come in Shantivan. Bap Dada had come. Not Shantivan, sorry. Om Shanti Bhavan. Om Shanti Bhavan. And there was a group of us sitting on the floor. And the date, I remember, was February 28th, coincidentally, I believe that's today's date. But that was Shivratri. So Baba was speaking the Murli, and I leaned over to Sister Gayatri, who was sitting next to me, and I said, Gayatri, do you realize Baba is a Piscean?
Which is a zodiac sign.
You, Babbitt, so all the Pisceans clap. Right, and we were both giggling a little bit about this, and Baba at the same time was talking about hearing the cries of your devotees. And in the middle of the Murli, Baba turned around and he went, Wadi, Gayatri, are you hearing the call of your devotees? Oh, we became very serious very quickly. So that's the one very clear memory that I have of Shivratri.
Thank you. Tells us a lot about you also. You each have your own microphone, so Sister Denise, would you want to share your experience about a special Shivratri, Shivjanti? Something you remember comes to mind now.
Well, I really don't have anything that comes to mind because they all merge in a combination of rose petals falling in Shantivan, in Gyan Sarovar, in Om Shanti Bhavan outside on the airplane. It used to be, I remember when Didi, Manmohini Didi, was carried in a palanquin up to aeroplane in Pandabhavan to raise the flag. And then later on they started the remote control. But you know what happened on Shivratri is Baba would give a particular toli, which is apple, quarters of apple with saffron and pistachios and butter. And that was the thing to eat on Shivratri, a special Shivratri toli. And so it's a kind of mixture with lots and lots of lights. And over the years, the number of lights is growing. The quantity of places where the flag is flying is growing. We have the hospital, the trauma center, the museum. Museum is always a very big deal. Now things are much more formal, but in the early days it was really more family. And we never thought of ourselves as an institution or an organization. But as the numbers grew, we naturally became more formalized and the barriers started going up. You know, now they've even got barriers on stage. So, gosh, you know. Yeah, that was new. But it was good because we could see Baba. So that was nice. And I think probably the wonderful thing is to have these 40 years, it is 40, seeing BK going from this teeny tiny little place in on the ground floor of Tennyson Road to and coming to India. There was like maybe two double foreigners or three, and we used to meet Baba in Baba's room or in the meditation hall. Then when, not the meditation hall, the actual history hall. We used to sit down on the floor, and 1 meter away from Baba was a bit far. You know, now look where we are, just miles, you know. But there we would have a picnic, you know. And whole day, whole night, whole next day, it was individual meetings Baba would tell us. And the whole thing is kind of merged into a kind of global experience of the confluence age, which is just life, you know. Life for us is the confluence age, the Brahma Kumaris service, our friendships with each other, and, you know, we're all survivors. We survived so many attacks of Maya and this and that. So, and we're here, we're still here, and we're happy. And this is wonderful.
Very good. And Charlie, you're happy for many reasons, but would you like to share one of your happy Shiv Jayanti experiences with us?
I was just thinking when Denise was saying that, well, she's 40 years. I remember when I was 10 years, a group of us met Baba. And Baba said that 10 years in foreign countries is equal to 25 years in India. So if you do a few calculations, she's 100 years in Gyan. So she's reached her century. She's overtaken the daddies. But I do remember Baba saying that. Just, you know, Denise was also touching on the growth in the family. And I remember in my first time in Madhuban, I did meet Baba in Baba's room, which was half the size of the present Baba's room. And I think that often the meetings or the venues for meetings with Baba indicate to me the change, because first meeting in Baba's room, second in the history hall, third in the meditation hall, fourth Om Shanti Bhavan, and then Diamond Hall. So that's just indicating the incredible growth in this family. I don't think I can remember a particular Shivratri meeting that's unique, but just last night, you know, and hearings from so many of Baba's children today, I just felt Baba was so loving. Did you feel that? It just, I don't know, this season Baba's exuding. And I wonder, is that me? Because Baba's always loving, you know. But my feeling is it just, he immerses us in love and takes us into that experience. So it was really special. Last night was lovely.
Very good. Did everybody have a good meeting last night?
Good.
All right. We're going to try to bring some of those feelings into the room, if you haven't lost them, and continue with those. But just a little question for all of you. How many of you are first-timers? Okay. Great. Welcome. Thank you. And the others have been here more than once, I'm assuming, then. All right. Because they asked us to kind of talk about whatever we wanted to, frankly. And so wanted to build on the themes from the Murli. Sister Mohini, I believe, is going to go deep into the understandings of the Murli, but we're going to kind of wander around some of these things. But the obstacles was a term that came up, and many of you have been churning on that since the last time, because it came up before, so it must be semi-important to be reiterated. But how would you, and I'm sure you've given many talks, Sister Wadi's already tired of obstacles. Obstacles are her obstacle. But you have to share about that. So how do you define that, or how do you describe that, or what would you actually say in your understanding when Baba says, become obstacle-free? What is an obstacle? Help us understand today, if you don't mind. And maybe Sister Denise can do that, and the others can add on if she's not doing sufficiently.
Well, I think we have certain things that we're supposed to do. Amrit Vela, take a shower, cup of tea, coffee, go to class, all the traffic controls, evening meditation, offer bog, be soul conscious, remember Baba. So anything that gets in the way of that is an obstacle.
Anything that gets in the way of our Brahman routine that Baba has given us is an obstacle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is almost everything.
Most everything, yeah. So is the internet an obstacle?
Very often, yeah. Because, well, the internet is contagious. I mean, it's addictive. I think the biggest obstacle is lust. But that's top secret, so we can't talk about it.
It's top secret, we can't talk about it?
Yeah, nobody ever talks about that celibacy is difficult.
You can do that.
Yeah, I can do that.
Sure.
Well, the internet, is a way to avoid celibacy, and one's attraction to beautiful BKs is a way to avoid celibacy, and the need to be loved, you know. And there are so many things, or your eyes will wander around, or your loneliness, and want to feel needed, loved, you know, all of these things. These are like gross or subtle or extremely subtle forms of lust, and they make your body conscious, and they interfere with your ability to be in a bodiless avyakt, and generally soul conscious. So he says it's the biggest enemy, and it is the biggest enemy. But people don't talk about it, but they maybe should. Right. And the other religions, they have a lot of problem with that.
I believe that.
Yeah. So it's very difficult to be pure, you know, like totally, totally pure, and not have ego.
Okay.
So, you know, the vices are obstacles.
And so vices are obstacles, and anything that interferes with our Brahman routine.
My voice is so low because I'm telling secrets.
Shh. We have to listen carefully.
Yeah.
Okay. So
it's over to Wadi.
Yes, to Wadi. Would you want to add, maybe that's not how you've defined obstacles in your...
Well, I'm not certainly not in disagreement with what Denise is saying. Sometimes it's a little easier maybe to talk about lust when you're over 60. Because sometimes what you can't overcome by your yoga power or whatever else, time really lends a hand. So the thing maybe about the internet and... even attachments and such like. I was asking someone this morning if they could think in terms of their own Brahman life of, say, a few major obstacles, because when I think about it, nothing comes to mind, actually. And that seems maybe a little bit strange. But what I hadn't factored in is very often, you see, when you think obstacle, you think a hindrance, you think a big thing, you think something negative. But the problem with most obstacles is they have a sweet side to them. They have an attractive side to them. So it could be an attachment. It could be, as you say, lust or some other such thing. And you're maybe not seeing, you're not seeing it as an obstacle because there's something attractive about it at the same time. And so then just getting to what Baba was talking about last night, the idea that it's not just a question of situational things, situations that arise, because at this stage you can see them. He tells you that you should even be able to see them in advance and therefore not see them as an obstacle. And so there's a certain amount of excitement almost, I think, when things present that you may see an aspect of difficulty, but there's also like an adrenaline created that, you know, I'm going to deal with this. I'm going to make it right. And in essence, that more than anything else, it is to do with our thinking about things. And that was what he was telling us to check.
Let me see if I understood. So our thinking about a situation, we could take it either way. One is, oh, here comes an obstacle and I'm excited to kind of deal with this. This will be fun. Or we can still have the thought that, oh, here's something and, oh, it's going to be so heavy and and we
it's
lose our energy.
It's bigger than me. It's bigger than me. And there's a certain element of reality that's missing. I think when I see it as problematic and then I create a whole story to support my seeing it as a problem and it becomes an even bigger problem, but more in my mind than anything else. And by extension, where Baba was saying last night too, that when you are obstacle free and you have the nature of being obstacle free and you even have the vibration of being obstacle free, that will reach those who are effort makers and help them to become obstacle free.
Okay,
and
lots of follow-up questions, but our attention is what we're going, Baba mentioned on. Does that have to do with what story we're telling ourselves? And should we learn to listen to what Baba says and tell the story he's telling us to ourselves when anything comes? And would that give us the energy to deal with these things and move forward?
That seems kind of elementary, no?
Okay. Well, if it's elementary, would it still be true?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, basic. In other words, he's saying, remember me, just think Baba.
Well,
you know, to change your mindset. It's not that the thing is going to go away by your doing that, but it's about changing your mindset.
Okay.
And something that Daddy said last night, that it's actually the heart that changes the mind. It's the heart that makes the mind peaceful. And so there's a connection, of course, between the thinking and the feelings. And so it's about having the right kind of feeling, in a sense, and then the thoughts.
Okay.
Charlie
was nodding and agreeing with that. So, Charlie, what's your thoughts about hearts and thoughts and changing and feelings and such?
I think the sort of the most fundamental need of life is the experience of a true quality of love, and I often feel that's the sort of the seed of the soul becoming sort of stable and peaceful. And I often feel that if there's not an experience of true love in life, the mind can never rest. It's sort of an agitated inner world. It's sort of searching for something which isn't there. And that's why I really believe my own experience is when I really feel love, I do find there's a cooling in my thinking. I sort of come closer to a sense of contentment or a sense of attainment. And I would say definitely the heart is the key to the overactive mind, because I think overthinking is a massive obstacle today. And I often think about overthinking, if I can. So that's a paradox in terms, but I think the overactive mind, you know, it's the culture of today to overanalyze and overthink. And I think it's very much, if someone was to ask me, you know, of the major obstacles I've faced, probably, you know, how scenes of drama, I suppose I think, you know, the way I think about things is that all the external personalities and things trigger things which are already sitting in me, the scenes of drama, and then that triggers often so much thinking and analysis. And I think often we have absolutely no control over that over-analytical thinking. And I really feel that with deep understanding, we can resolve quickly. We're not suppressing, because that's not healthy either. But if we look through the filter of Baba's truth, we can, you know, really understand much more quickly and resolve an obstacle. But I think a lot for me, I was just reflecting on it this morning. What fascinates me about obstacles, it's all about perception. And we perceive something as an obstacle, it grows in our head, and we put power into that particular thing. And Baba said last night, actually, you know, you should see an obstacle before it comes. And I was thinking, he's almost saying doing the opposite. Almost before an obstacle comes, diffuse it, because it's all perception. And I think it's related to my karmic accounts, that it's like, you know, you've experienced something, so you come up against something new, so you start to think that personality is going to be difficult, that situation is going to be difficult, and I grow it in my thinking. And I think Baba was saying, even before that time, you know, it's all a state of mind. I think it's all to do with perception. And in a sense, an obstacle is being deceived by my nature and my sanskaras. And a lot of it, I feel, is rather than my old perception of who I am and what life is dominating, I have a new perception from Baba. And if I apply that perception, it's more obstacle-free.
I have a thought. I was talking to Baba for a few days, saying, you know, what I really want, and I ask this question to people, what do you want, what do you want? It's a useful question, difficult to answer, but I said, what I really want is I want to see the secret of drama with my third eye. And I focused on that demand for a while, and for the following few days, I started to get exactly that, which was really interesting. And one of the words that you used was coming up a lot, and that is perception. So it became a lot to do with exactly what perception is, and of course, who perceives is the soul. And you perceive the drama, and of course, people really have a problem with this exact identical repetition of the drama. So to see the exact identical repetition of the drama with your third eye as a perception, what you see is the whole deal is tests of detachment or exercises in detachment. All of it is an exercise in detachment. And we get all these obstacles or tests or however you want to put them, and they're all presented to us in order to refine our perceptions so that we can actually see things through the third eye, what they really are. And because it repeats identically every 5,000 years indefinitely, it really doesn't matter. But what matters is, are you detached? And the proof of being detached is stability. And really detached is you are absolutely who you are, and you're absolutely with Baba, and you give love, and everyone has permission to be who they are. And then you can be still. And once you're still, then you can let go, because the whole thing is, what was he saying? The program is now go home. So, and he said anything could happen, you know. And if you look at what's happening in the world, I don't know if anybody looks at the news, but it's very dicey at the present time between America and Russia. And their nuclear bombs are not very far apart from each other in a place north of Poland, and not too far from the Ukraine, which is all being, you know. So anytime, anything could happen, and then he says, and then you won't be able to do this anymore, and you'll have to only do service through the mind. We can't do service through the mind until we're still.
Charlie was going to jump in, then Wadi.
No, I was just really fascinated with the, you know, the whole thing of drama, because was it 3 or 4 days ago when Baba, the whole Morley Baba, was talking about identical repetition, and I was sort of traveling on my way here, and I just had that in the front of my mind a lot, all these little scenes. I was traveling in Sri Lanka and South India. And I was amazed, actually, just that thought even removes sort of even subtle sort of barriers or obstacles that come in your mind. It just instantly diffused that feeling. And I was remembering that last night Baba ultimately led us into that the major obstacle is waste thought. And I, at one point I remember thinking that all waste thought is a lack of acceptance of the perfection of drama. You know, like drama is absolutely perfect and yet the mind fights it and creates an obstacle because I don't like or accept. And I think that's a very body conscious concept. This is good drama or bad drama, or I like this scene or I don't like this scene. Actually, the drama is. It just is, and it's perfect in every way. And it's an amazing sort of sense of surrender, isn't it? Just to, you know, even a scene, if it's a little bit through the old vision, a bitter scene, and yet it's always is. And if I allow waste to come and dominate my thinking, and this amazing state of just accepting the scene of drama, will I have any waste thoughts? It's the subject of drama. Once I remember Baba was talking to the double foreigners and he said, there's three tilaks, and Baba held his finger like this, and the first one he went like the soul, and then he went the supreme soul, and then he said, when it comes to drama, it goes here, it goes here. And it's really true. I think we often make so much effort in the first two steps, the soul and the supreme soul, but the depth of that knowledge of drama, you know, how deep is it? And if I ride clearly on that knowledge, I don't think there will be obstacles.
Trying to remember, was it Transformers he called us last night, or was that the word he used right at the beginning of the Murli? Was it Transformer? Yeah, that you're helping him to transform the world, and with that idea that your kingdom is about to come. And the sense at that time was, am I interested in transforming the world in the sense that I accept it as it is, and in the same way as looking out the other day and seeing all of the blossoms on the mango trees, and you're not thinking, well, there should be mangoes there now, because it's not the time for the mangoes, it's the time for the blossoms. And in the same way, the acceptance of, as you say, the drama, that there's something very, very beautiful about the confluence age and whatever else is happening, that everything has to pass through to that inevitable stage. And so then later on, he put it a slightly different way, and that I related to very much. And so even whilst appreciating the totality of the drama at the moment and not being in a state of reaction to the bad things that are happening, if I see them as bad, but the kingdom would be without any trace of sorrow. And that idea I like very much, that there's no one who will be in the experience of sorrow. And then just to share something, maybe humor me on this, but he also started the Murli referring to your memories at the present time and about the memories of the confluence age being merged. And I think all of us, and I certainly know for those of us who are on the stage and many, many more, no matter when you come in Gyan, you have the experience similar to the beginning of the yajna. Doesn't matter what's going on around you. It wasn't Karachi, Baba wasn't there physically, but you have that experience in which you're totally absorbed and all you know is Baba and the feelings and everything else. And I know for my own self, coming back now to Madhuban, and there's many, many memories that arise, and of the beauty of the days of childhood. And if my days of childhood were so incredible, then what must the days of childhood have been like for those who were at the beginning of the yajna? And I think that the intensity of their experiences was such that drama had no choice but to repeat again. That it was their experience in a kind of a way that said, encore, encore, we have to do this again. And so we all know we have to go through all these trials and tribulations, you know, and then the experience of the Golden Age, but ultimately back to that incredible experience of the Confluence Age. So great value for the Confluence Age.
Well, I hope you experience another Confluence Age then.
I will.
Good. Good. Just skipping with in all the bits in between. Baba had also mentioned a request for us, and that he wanted us to experience joy. Okay? He mentions Baba wants you to experience joy. How does that tie in with obstacles and attention, if it does? It was in the same Merle. But are you as joyful as you would like to be? Are you as joyful as you think Baba wants you to be? And where does that come from? Is that something you work on? Is it something that emerges naturally? Where is the joy that Baba wants you to have now? And have you made effort on that? And what has been your experience on creating and sharing that joy? Denise. The most joyful.
Well, unlike Charlie, I do an enormous amount of analyzing. But I don't analyze things to death. I analyze them to life, in a way. I will see something which will be attempting to take away my joy. And I will look at it from many angles. Because I'm always looking for the key in it to how to me, the thing that gives happiness is when you understand something you didn't understand before. So when you've got something that looks like it's a trouble, it means you don't quite understand something. So I look at it, analyze it, and then when I see it and put my finger on it, this is this, then it's as if the purpose of that thing coming into my perception has been fulfilled because I understood something about that kind of situation, which added to my accumulated wisdom or whatever. But I think that my joy is stable because I can see the reason for everything that comes, or I put my finger on it. This is this. So the, I don't know what you call it, power of discernment, perhaps. And I really like the powers, and you use the powers. You have to use the powers in the Confluence Age, otherwise you're not going to have any joy. But you use the powers, and you get clarity, you get the right angle on the thing, and then that thing isn't an obstacle at all, but it's something that has enhanced your sense of who you are and your value and the wonder of Baba and so on. So my joy lies in those things.
So a joy in learning. Would that be...
No,
not learning. Okay.
Getting the point.
Being the point.
Getting the point, seeing. This whole thing of perception, I think, is really important. Once you can perceive what it really is, as opposed to what it seems to be, then you have, bliss.
Mm-hmm.
Happiness is a byproduct of doing the right thing, but bliss, I think, is a returning to the state in which you exist on an eternal basis, yeah? When you understand everything, when you see everything, you've got the same perception what Shiva Baba has. He lives in a state of bliss. So we can too.
Sounds attractive. Sister Wadi, you were...
What was the question?
There was no question. It was just your enthusiasm to respond to your joy.
I think bliss, Denise Ben is talking about bliss. I think bliss is very peculiar to the Confluence Age. I don't think there'll be bliss in Satyug, that it is only possible at this time. And I don't see it as a steady state. I see it as the relationship, the yoga experience. And that's why it's not in the golden age. There'll be happiness. You can have happiness, you can have peace, you can have all of these other things in the golden age. But I think bliss is particular to this time and is only in the relationship with God in yoga. That's my experience in a way. Happiness, Baba has said it many times, that very categorically that if you're not happy, you're not a Brahman. And I certainly know that for me, that happiness is an important thing. But then how do you gauge happiness? It's not that I can't lose it very quickly, too. But I remember the very first time I came to Madhavan, and I wasn't really a Brahman at that stage, and asking with Brother Karuna, we were out walking in Baba's Rock or something, and asking him, are you happy? Because these were my first senior Brahmins, right? And he said, sister, now is not the time for happiness. And I understood in a sense what he meant. And there's a happiness that is very particular, I think, for the Brahmins. And you can see it. Someone was telling me about, I've forgotten who it was, but they were in a gathering recently and people were singing, you know, hymns and holy songs and bhajans and one thing and another. And yet the look on their face, even though these were songs of happiness to do with God, but the look on their face was of you know, pain. And yet you look at Brahmin faces and generally speaking there's an energy in the eyes that shows that they are alive. And like Denise Ben, I would say that one of the, maybe thrill would be a word I would use, what gives me a great thrill, is realization. Even knowing, and again what was being implied here, that in that realization, and you think, oh, now I've got it, now I understand it, but that's temporary also, because something else will happen to make you realize that you haven't entirely got it. And I wonder if you ever entirely get it, that it's this game of just, you know, upping the, what would you call it? Upping the ante, as they say, all the while. You can never rest on your laurels. You can never say, I have enough love now, I have enough happiness, I have enough peace. Because, and as Denise is saying, that what you thought was, you will be shown it wasn't that at all. And now something else. And so it's this endless game. But the game should be enjoyable. It shouldn't be one that makes you feel defeated or cheated or anything else. But that it's ongoing. And then the thing, too, which that I know, that I really know, even though I forget it, and that is whatever the situations that you are dealing with that come in front of you, they didn't come unrequested. They didn't come by accident. It's not anybody else. And so in the wisest, deepest part of your soul, you have invited those things. I'm not saying your karma dictated it, that you didn't know you were doing this action over here, that it would result in this thing over there. But no, you know you have to get back to that original place. And in order to do so, these are the situations or the challenges rather than obstacles that you have to deal with. And that's why I say sometimes there's a little bit of excitement, because they didn't come, they won't come until you are ready for them. You might spend a little time in denial of that, but if they have come, you're ready for them. And once you know that it was yourself who invited them, then it's like you have a little bit of power to deal with them and be even amused by them. And I would say for me, I remember once being in front of Baba, and I really had this, oh, such a feeling of so much love having been received from Baba, from the seniors, from the whole family. And the question in my mind at that moment was, why do I get so much love? Because I felt pretty undeserving of it. I certainly hadn't done anything to deserve it. And that was the question in my mind, why do I get so much love? And when I came in front of Baba's table, and this was in the meditation hall, immediately Baba started, and he said the reason, I didn't ask him the question, it was just in my mind, and he said the reason you get so much love is because from the beginning you've always wanted to learn. And it melted my heart. If he had said you always wanted to study, I'd have thought, no, you've got the wrong person. But to learn, yes. And I think that's something that really helps you maintain your happiness.
Thank you, Wadi. Brother Charlie's going to share on his learning about joy and happiness and some of your experiences with that and what Baba means when he brings that up in the Murli.
When I started, I remember, do you remember that little book, Illustrations of Raj Yoga? I don't know whether everyone has read it, but Jagdish Bhai put it together, and there's one picture. You know how even an image can just be so inspirational, and the image was yogi in bliss? And that almost gave me the picture of what yoga is about. And it's a yogi sitting, and all his body has got rays of beautiful colors, like light going through his body and out into the world, just absorbed in Baba. And I remember just that I found that picture so inspirational. And I suppose for me, you know, joy is the ultimate state of wisdom, that I can live in a world with so many challenges and obstacles and keep myself happy. I think that's an incredible state of learning and achievement here. But to me, in one sense, I think joy is a state of complete freedom. You know, the soul is free from itself, its sanskaras, its karmic story, its perception of relationships. And you know, when you feel free, the lightness and the... And when I don't feel joy, I observe there is some subtle sort of heaviness or something in the mind, you know, some sort of self-conscious sort of feeling that can be there. But it's a wonderful feeling. And I once heard that Brahma Baba, you know, when Didi came, when Mama died and Didi came to Madhuban, someone asked, well, why did you invite her? Baba said, because she's always cheerful. And Baba saw, you know, often we see a cheerful person, or they're just cheerful, they're light, but actually there's a deep state of truth and wisdom in such a soul who keeps themselves so easy in all the circumstances and situations. So it really is an expression of a, you know, Gyani Yogi personality.
Could I ask Eric? Because he makes us, certainly he amuses us and entertains us a lot, brings smiles and laughter. So could you maybe share with us what gives you joy?
You want a joke or something like that?
Not a joke. We're being serious now.
Wow.
If that's possible.
Well, I'm not sure if I can answer your question, but I'll give you a response. As Charlie was talking, I have the freedom to kind of skip along with the experiences. And what was coming to me is how I can feel multiple experiences, multiple feelings, emotions at the same time. And I might be in the midst of something that's quite frustrating, but if somebody would ask me, are you happy? Are you joyful? I can step out of that and say, yes, I've got very deep joy. But and then I can step back into, well, but yeah, I'm dealing with this. And so I think there's the ability For myself, I can confirm this, to ratchet between what I want to experience. And sometimes I forget that I need to step out of things more often because I'm not always doing the things that bring me joy. Okay, we had kind of a heavy winter in New York. I don't know. We had ice and snow, and so I've got a sore shoulder from chopping ice and shoveling snow for the past 2 months. But if you'd ask me, was I happy? I'm very happy. But at the same time, there's this kind of fury that's brewing in there also. But able to move back and forth to where I want to, I find that's a very useful skill. And to recognize that my core and ultimate being is happy and joyful and blissful, and to remove myself and go to those places regularly is very beneficial, if that makes any sense, so that I'm always happy and I'm always joyful, but sometimes I lose myself in whatever's going on, so I can pull myself back out. So you can ask me anytime how I'm feeling.
Okay, but there was a similar, little bit similar experience the first morning that I arrived and sitting for Amrit Vela, and likening it to when you're watching a movie and you're totally absorbed by the movie.
You don't understand that concept.
You can or can't?
Watching a movie, what do you mean by that?
And you get totally lost in the movie. You've forgotten about your own life. There's nothing of the mundane stuff of your own life or the detail or anything else. You're completely lost in the storyline and the characters, etc. But even after the movie, although you go back, you step back into your real life, but you're still influenced by what you saw in the movie. And the experience in meditation that morning was a little bit like that, that the subtle region, the subtle experience, was like being lost in that movie, which is a little bit different from your regular life. And so you come back into some degree of body consciousness again, but you still, the influence of what you experienced in your meditation is still there with you and remains.
Just listening to you, Eric, I really loved what you said, because I think it's a sense of detachment, isn't it? It's an objectivity that, you know, you sometimes have. And I can remember early in Gyan, a part of me being influenced by something, and you're very much involved in the influence, but a part of you stepping right back and sort of observing the influence. And I think, you know, this year, detachment has been really high on my agenda. I don't know what you've been feeling and how absolutely necessary. And once again, such an indicator of wisdom that's lived, you know, rather than just believed. It's such a powerful thing. And, you know, when obstacles come, in a sense of perception, detachment enables you to not get caught up in your old perception. You know, because I think it's a habit to perceive the obstacle as such a big thing and just fall into the mode of, you know, being submissive to that problem or issue and overthinking about it. But that space, I feel that sweet space that you have in your mind between you and the drama and personalities and relationships that enables you not to sort of buy into it. And this year, I think I was having a lot of feelings about detachment in terms of the scenes of drama, to be a detached observer. In terms of my relationships with everyone, to be a benevolent observer. But in terms of myself, to be an honest observer. And I think that's one of the biggest things, isn't it? To have total objectivity, to see yourself, even when you're undergoing an obstacle, you're caught in it, but you can still somehow observe you're caught in it, you know. And I think that's a place where you can overcome Maya. Once you get caught in it and it's over the top of you, that's where you're under the grip. But there's always that objectivity, no matter how big the obstacle, you sort of know you're having an obstacle and you're coming from that place of wisdom and truth, that objectivity. That detached place is such a sweet place to be. That's how I was understanding the way you were describing.
Sounds beautiful. I'm going to introduce another concept. We kind of mentioned that. I like the definition that was offered, and I forget who. It might have been Charlie, but I don't know. Lack of acceptance of the perfection of the drama was offered as what waste is. Okay, and it sounded very poetic, so I wrote it down. But Baba talked about waste thoughts a lot, and he said something quite wonderful, and when you write it in English, it's nice, but waste thoughts waste time. Okay, and that makes great sense, but it's very easy way to think of that. But then he said, you will need time. And one way of understanding that is waste thoughts are going to waste my time, and I could be doing something else, but I heard that a little differently and want to kind of bounce the idea off you. Why do we need time? Or what is the value of time? He didn't finish the sentence or the concept. He said, you will, waste thoughts, waste time, but he didn't say so that you can study and do something with that.
I thought he did. I thought he connected it with effort.
Efforts,
that
okay.
You would be able to put that time towards effort.
All right.
Yes. Rather than wasting time.
But there is still that sense that if we cannot waste time, but we might not be making effort. Is there a space in there that could exist? And so that sense that we need to use our time to make efforts now is what he was saying?
He said Tivra Purusharat. I don't know what translation you got for it, but
you
normally
just spoke Hindi, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Normally you get the word intense effort. Is that right?
Typically, yes, for Purushottam.
Tivra means fast.
Fast.
Fast. Fast.
Fast.
That's right. Fast. So, what is the speed of a thought? It's very fast. So you will need time, because your final exam is 1 second, which is, how many nanoseconds is that? Quite a lot, right?
Quite a lot to an Olympic athlete.
Right. And so if you waste time by wasting thought, your capacity to use or to be present at that time when you need to make that particular fast effort at that particular nanosecond, you will fail the test.
So wasting thoughts is a sanskar that will be limiting for us when we need to make...
Yeah, you'll miss the moment of your death.
I don't think I will.
I think you will, because you have to be so present for it that it is a thing that you do. It takes just a fraction, go now. And if you say, I missed it.
Yeah.
And then death takes you instead of you, go now.
Okay.
See what
so
I mean?
You think that's going to be our choice, our last thing? Baba says, come, and we're going to say, I'm going, as opposed to, I've gone?
Or, wait a minute, I've got to... what about my...
I have to send this email to Charlie.
Yeah. So, I think one of the things Dadi does is she never has anything pending, so that you're absolutely present for the present moment. And then, because the things that come up, the tests that come, they come. I show people this video in my talks. I don't know if you've seen it. It's the samurai who chops a bullet when it's being shot at him.
Yeah.
And it takes 3/10 of a second for him to hear the fact that the bullet has been shot, but it's much faster that it gets to him and hits him. So he has to use a completely different kind of perception in order to cut that bullet before it hits him. So to me, that's the meaning of fast effort, that our thought has to operate not on the speed of sense perception, but on something that is beyond that. And I think that when we're still operating in waste thoughts, we're still keeping ourselves in the speed of sense perception. Whereas when you're doing something like martial arts at that level, you're on a different kind of perception. So when Baba says, see the obstacle before it comes, there's another kind of perception. So to me, fast effort is that you have this ability to see everything, what it is, before it is, and you're so there for it that you do the thing without having to even think about what it is you have to do.
Okay, so talk some more about this ability that I haven't sat through a class on how to chop a bullet, so I'm not quite sure exactly how to develop that skill. It sounds like a real tough one to practice.
Well, it's an example of, you know, because when we hear the word intense effort, now I have to put it through my mind and think, you know, what does that mean, intense? Do I have to be intense, you know? Or what is it really? So I always look at alternative ways to translate the words. And tivra is fast, but when you put fast with effort, then you don't know what that means. So you put intense because it seems to mean something that we can understand. But if you put fast and really work with it until you get what he wants by fast effort, is that this speed of your comprehension, processing of what you have to do, what state you have to be in, your position, your vritti, kriti, etc., smriti, and so on and so forth, instant, to meet the thing, full on. To me, that's fast effort. Otherwise, we are left behind, you know.
Well, Baba presented that, and the others, Charlie, you're going to add something here, was to eliminate waste thoughts. So would our efforts to be present and not have thoughts go in other directions be sufficient to be able to perceive obstacles before they come? Charlie, maybe you can share from your experience of a samurai bullet chopper.
I'm afraid I can't share from that.
Maybe you can pause for a couple moments.
I think one thing that Baba did say last night in this context, something like pay attention to each and every thought. And I remember reading once a scientist suggesting, and I don't know where they get the figures from, but he said, you know, you create 30 to 50,000 unique thought patterns in a day. Now, the numbers are irrelevant, but so much thinking, and on the one side you can become a bit self-absorbed, you know how you can become a bit intense about your thinking, self-absorbed and even overreacting to my own thinking. But one thing I remember, Baba was meeting Daddy Nirmala Shanti years ago, and he said something really lovely to her. He said that he asked her, actually, you're busy, aren't you? And she said, yes. And then Baba said, you're very busy, aren't you? And she said, yes, I'm very busy. Then Baba said, many drops make an ocean. And he sort of gave her this wonderful plan on how to use your mind in a busy day. He said, between meetings, as you walk up the hall, where does your intellect go? And that's an amazing question, because I really do think about this. That, you know, when you leave a conversation, you start to process what was said, you know, that sort of, or you start to analyze something. What Baba was saying, rather than that game, go to Baba, you know. So use those drops to fill up yourself. And I think that, I think that's a wonderful recipe, because I've been observing, you know, how deep it is for us to leave a scene and start to process the scene and analyze the scene, which I totally agree with Denise, that's probably one of the great qualities of an intellect to analyze. But I think there's satopradhana analysis, which is sharp and fast. But the longer it goes, I think it turns into waste thought, you know. The pure analysis becomes just waste, and there's a happy medium in there too. Sort of, and we know how Baba, a few years ago, he said actually the weakness in the children is a lack of an ability to put a full stop. And that's a fascinating concept too, because you just can't suppress thinking. So it's such a profound understanding, even in just a second, or realization, to resolve, not suppress, ongoing ideas in your head, so that you can move forward into, you know, the next scene of drama. Because, I mean, the indicator for Baba over the last how many years is our biggest obstacle is our wasteful thinking, the habit of reacting to scenes. And I really love that you're busy, and those moments between things, observe, where does your intellect go? Does it go to Baba? Does it go to churning something, or does it go to this almost this constant analysis and processing of things? And there's a healthy side to that, but it can become an unhealthy side too. I don't know. What do you feel?
I think in the last, it's just been in the last few months, I was reading where maybe the last, like, soldier, Japanese soldier, I believe it was, from the Second World War emerged from the jungles in kind of tatters and rags. He was still thinking that he was at war, you know, and how much and how far the world has moved, even in terms of peace in all that time. And the same thing happens with us. You know, we may have a criticism for a senior, they didn't see me, they didn't speak to me, they didn't give me drishti, whatever, and you keep repeating the story and repeating the story, not only in your own mind, but to everybody else who cares to listen. And of course that other person, the senior, who did not deliberately ignore you or harm you, but they have kept moving, they have kept going on. And so the gap between you and them becomes wider and wider. And so it's like Baba says, follow in the footsteps of, you know, the senior ones. And so how to very quickly resolve things so that I can get in step again, and that I'm following, if they're following in Baba's footsteps, that I am too, and not to waste that time.
Yeah, I'd just like to add that this ability to resolve things, if we can get really good at that, that's so good. Because you can't put a full stop, which is in fact a suppression. But that becomes an explosion later on. But quick resolution, let go, thank you very much, have a nice day, and on we go. That is yoga. To stay free in the mind. Because the wonderful thing is that everything is basically Tom and Jerry cartoons. So, you know, it's okay. Isn't it?
Cartoons are good.
Cartoons are good. He said, see, everything is a cartoon, and you will find the amusing angle and then a little entertainment and you're on to the next thing.
A lot of people in my life are cartoon characters. One more and final kind of thoughts that your experience and comments might be appreciated. There's a sister that is in our region, United States, and is remote, lives by herself, and is kind of a, I don't know if fundamentalist might be the right word, but a strict interpreter of the Murli. And has heard some of the recent Murlis and has been very discouraged from how she has applied that, because Baba says that you should go to every door and give the message. And she finds that very frustrating in her part of the United States by knocking on her neighbor's door and giving the message. She's finding that they're not overly receptive to that service tactic. However, Baba said to double foreigners, give the message and introductions to all and make sure that you don't leave anybody out. How do you understand that, and how would you give advice to those in your areas for serving so that Baba's guidance are there, but it makes practical sense also? Brother Charlie, with the microphone by your mouth.
I remember a group of us were meeting Baba many years ago, and I can't even remember the group, but he said any questions, and no one had any questions, so I just sort of piped up and said, Baba, what sort of service should we be doing? And Baba slowly looked over to me, and the first thing he said was, I've already told you. And then he said, in foreign countries, just create a powerful atmosphere. And then he repeated it, just create a powerful atmosphere. And you know, I love that, because we know that there's many ways of giving the message, and if it's a verbal message, how many groups are out there evangelizing about their truth, and it just turns off people so strongly, I think, anywhere. But what I love about atmosphere, and I feel the specialty of the Brahma Kumaris, people are better speakers, better this than all of us, but atmosphere-wise, I think, you know, that's what we do really well. Atmosphere speaks to the sanskars. You know, knowledge will speak and touch their intellectual thing, but as we know, they walk out, or atmosphere makes them feel something. And I feel that, you know, if we really create a powerful atmosphere, it jiggles something deep, the deep in the memory of the soul. And that's where I can remember in the early days in Australia, all we did was courses. So we used to sit in yoga buttis on the weekend. And I think a lot of foreign service started in this way. And honestly, it was absolutely amazing, you know, how Baba says to serve through the mind. But literally the phones would ring and the door would ring and people, there's a subtle attraction. And I do feel that, yes, you know, in different creative ways, we have to communicate ideas. But fundamentally, I think people of different religious backgrounds and et cetera, atmosphere is a really attracting. And when they come through atmosphere, they will listen to what you have to suggest.
In the Abhayak Murli on Sunday, Baba was talking to the seniors, and it was to do, one of the aspects was to do with drishti, about having the power of drishti. And I think that's also a very profound thing, that when you're interacting, not even necessarily with people who are coming to the center looking for something, but when you're interacting with anyone, that what's in your consciousness at that time has the ability to touch that same thing within them, that little flower in terms of an image that can, you know, break through the concrete, if you like. And so I think that drishti, your consciousness, just as you're looking at them in the eyes and their sense, and then those that come to Baba's house will sometimes say it, that they feel it was the first time they'd ever been seen. So it's not even about the words or anything else, but it's your way of looking. It's your way of seeing, you know. Yeah, beauty isn't, you know, how you look, it's how you see.
Going back to when I first came in Gyan, there were two things. One was the room where I was, and the very non-Denise style pictures. I said, you know, because the first thing I saw was this Ravan's hand grabbing the earth in this red egg, and it said purity, peace, prosperity, and it was huge, and the room was really small and dark, and I said, whoa, what is this? And then there was Vishnu, and that was it. And then I started to feel the atmosphere, because Daddy Janki was on the other side of the wall doing tapasya. And I said, I don't care about the visuals, the atmosphere. And I also wanted to bring up this idea of trust. I think we don't trust what people say, because they can, you know, make it sound really good, but you do trust the atmosphere. And, of course, the atmosphere is magnetic. And I remember last October, and Baba didn't come, and Mandaben had arranged this amazing bhati of 16,000 people. Was it 16,000 or something? It was a lot of people. Well, the one before. Anyway, it was really a good experience of how a large number of people generate atmosphere, and it was very self-sustaining, and I really feel that it went out. And so I think that it's important for us to think about atmosphere as a means of communication.
I was just going to share what of when I first walked into Tennyson Road, there used to be a picture of the cycle on the wall, and underneath it said, "You stood here in front of this picture 5,000 years ago." This was in the hallway of Tennyson Road. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, that's a bit strange. I remember Brother Ken came and saw it and he went, wow. Old souls are very different, aren't they? I think it would scare most people off. But this is how we were in those days, you know, the first picture in the in the hallway.
Pictures in Tennyson Road, the other one which we would be absolutely abhorred by at the present time, in the front, facing onto the street, was a picture of the swastika. This is in London.
I'm looking at a couple of different clocks, and I'm going to go with the one that says 12:18. And we might be able to go on, but we're not going to. We're going to bring this to an end. But these three very special souls all were instructed in Tennyson Road by Dadi Janki. Is that correct? And so there's some sort of unity or similarity in their experiences, even though they're very different in their sharing of that. But I'd like them all to pick up their microphones right now, because atmospheres... I'd like them all to pick up their microphones right now, because atmosphere seems to be a thread that they share and can recognize and feel and create. And so I'm going to ask them something, and I would like your support on this, is that I would like them to give a commentary together. And so one's going to start with a phrase, and the other's going to pick that up and share. And the third will continue, and we'll have a joint meditation commentary by these three Tennyson Road trained individuals. But does that sound like you would like to experience that? Yes, and I'm sure they would be great, because they are so attuned to each other and they are so free from waste thoughts that they will pick up the feeling that is being shared and be able to build on that. And I believe that this will be an experience that you will love to come back to in 5,000 years. So I want to thank our panelists, or our participants, and you will share on whatever it is, but one start, and the others continue. Do you understand what I'm asking you to do?
How long?
Not more than 9 minutes.
5 minutes.
Is that okay? And so if we can put a little more energy to their microphones, dim the lights for meditation, we'll finish this session up on Baba's Merli and happy birthday to all with a lovely commentary by the three of them. Thank you so much in advance.
Let me sit in front of Baba's loving eyes. And feel his drishti. Coming into the depth of my being. Baba sees me as obstacle free. Beyond the influence of waste. A mind so clean and pure and still.
I go deeper and touch my heart. To feel the clean, pure feelings of love. And to become still, receiving the sweetness of Baba's presence and feeling the heart becoming so clean, so free, so light.
It's a return to innocence, a return to trust. All questions answered. Love increasing. Wisdom broadening. Utter peace. Safe, in the arms of my Creator.
In these loving arms, feeling so nourished and cherished, Baba, you are giving me the inner strength to make it happen, to step out of my limits, my perception of obstacles and problems, and become free. With your strength, Baba, I change my vision towards everything around me. It's not an obstacle, but an opportunity to come close to you and practice what you are teaching me.
Baba, I take your light deep into my being. I take your power. And the nature of my being is transforming. At every level, physical, subtle, and within the very soul, everything is becoming pure, completely valuable and perfect.
Holding me, caressing me, knowing me, reminding me all the edges soften. And I merge into His immensity. Drawing His energy in and then expanding and expressing outwards and inviting all other souls, humanity, into that embrace that is the Father, the Mother, our Creator, God.
Om Shanti. Thank you so much for being a part of this. Thank you for creating such a wonderful atmosphere.